The fourth case of the morning, Raul Iglesias versus McCaskey, appeal number 07-2910. Mr. Bergen.
May it please the court. My name is Chris Bergen on behalf of the petitioner in this matter, Raul E. Iglesias. Mr. Iglesias filed this petition for review to challenge the BIA's decision denying his motion to reopen so that he can await the decision on his I-130 petition and adjustment of status petition through his U.S. citizen wife. The motion was submitted pursuant to the board's decision in matter of Velarde. The petitioner believes that the BIA abused its discretion when it denied his motion to reopen. In its denial, the BIA found that the petitioner failed to meet the fourth factor of the five-factor Velarde test. That factor being that the BIA found that my client failed to provide clear and convincing evidence of the bona fide nature of his marriage.
Before you get to that, is one of the factors for the Velarde whether the government objects to a motion to reopen?
Yes, Your Honor. The fifth factor is whether the Department of Homeland Security's attorneys object on a ground other than related to matter of Arthur.
So that has an impact on this case, doesn't it?
That's correct. Okay. Would you like me to answer that now?
Yeah, go ahead. No, you can answer that now.
Okay. Yes, Your Honor. The government's brief seems to indicate that if the Department of Homeland Security opposes the motion on grounds other than matter of Arthur, then that amounts to an absolute veto in reality. Now, this would collapse the distinction between the BIA and the Department of Homeland Security if that were the case. And the Sixth Circuit has addressed this issue in SAR, where they've stated that solely based on the Department of Homeland Security's opposition, the BIA just isn't required automatically to deny a motion to reopen. Because otherwise, no matter what the BIA thought, no matter how much evidence was introduced by a petitioner, it wouldn't matter. If the Department of Homeland Security opposed it, then that's the end of the story. Now, in relationship to the clear and convincing evidence of the bona fide nature of the marriage.
But let me just go back for a minute here.
Yes, sure.
The government here, the opposition to the motion to reopen is based on Arthur, right? Is it based on the Arthur case?
No. No, Your Honor.
All right.
Okay. In relation to the clear and convincing evidence of a bona fide marriage, in the Velarde case itself, the BIA states that the evidentiary standard set forth at 8 CFR section 204.2A1, Roman numeral 3B, is the standard to look at. And that standard cites certain things that need to be present to prove that there's a bona fide marriage: joint ownership of property, lease or showing a joint tenancy in common with the U.S. citizen spouse, commingling of financial resources, birth certificates of any children born to the marriage, and affidavits from third parties as to the validity of the marriage and the bona fide nature of the marriage.
Did he submit his own affidavit?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Did he submit his own affidavit?
Not, Your Honor.
Why not? I mean, that would be the most logical starting point, I would suppose.
Your Honor, I suppose, although to some extent an affidavit stating that, yes, I have a bona fide marriage is a bit self-serving and really
conclusionary, but an affidavit about how we met, and, this detail. These kind of marriages during these proceedings are always a little suspect, I think, so you would expect an affidavit, detailed affidavit from him.
Yes, Your Honor. Well,
you do have this very heavy burden.
Yes, that was not submitted. However, he did submit a great deal of objective evidence as to the validity of his marriage, such as the fact that his wife did file for him the I-130 petition, the marriage certificate, proof of a joint bank account, commingling of funds, state IDs and driver's licenses from the state of Illinois from both the petitioner and his spouse, showing they have the same address.
How long had they been married?
They had been married at the time of filing or now?
Well,
now about approximately 2 years.
Well, at the time of filing, obviously.
At the time of filing, it was they had been married very briefly, like several months. And that's why we filed the I-130 immediately. Also, the Social Security card, which she changed into her maiden to her married name of Iglesias. Now, these two pieces of evidence are government documents, which, after post Real ID Act, are not easy to obtain if you are not who you say you are, you're not married to who you say you are, and you don't live where you say you do. They also submitted a landlord's evidence, a landlord's affidavit as to their joint residence, and then third-party affidavits from family and friends as to the validity of their marriage, along with wedding photos. We believe that the petitioner in this case submitted much more evidence than the petitioner in the original Velarde case themselves. If you read Velarde, the BIA cites the evidence that was submitted in that case. Four pieces of evidence: a marriage certificate, proof that there was a child born of the marriage, proof that the petitioning spouse had filed the petitions for the respondent, and also a document as to the citizenship of the petitioning spouse.
Did he provide any actual bank account record versus just the letter from Chase?
No, Your Honor, but it was a letter that was, clearly from the bank, official letter from the bank summarizing their account.
But no checking account records?
No.
Other than that letter?
No, Your Honor. And that goes to what we said in our brief, which deals with, you take a person, a petitioner, where they are in their life, and these petitioners obviously aren't as economically successful as others, so it's hard. They don't own property, either of them. They don't have jobs where their medical insurance covers them. So that makes it much more difficult sometimes, depending on the person's economic situation, to prove, to bring out as much evidence as you possibly can. But that shouldn't be held against the client because of their economic situation. But we do believe that in Velarde, there was less evidence shown of the validity of the marriage, yet the Board of Immigration Appeals did reverse and reopen that case. And yet, in our case, we provided more evidence than Velarde, and yet the Board denies the motion to reopen. We believe that's clearly an abuse of discretion. Now, getting back to Judge Williams' point about the fifth factor, yes, the government does seem to believe that DHS opposition alone is an absolute veto. We just cite the Sixth Circuit and SAR as contrary to that position. Also, the government seems to believe that the BIA is never required to reopen, that it has unfettered discretion. Now, this would render this whole abuse of discretion review that we're doing now pointless, because any decision that would be made by the BIA would be legitimate under that standard. Finally, the BIA, in its decision, we want the court to note that they merely restate the Department of Homeland Security's position. There doesn't appear to be any evidence in the decision that they heard about the case, they thought about it, they looked at the evidence, the multiple pieces of evidence that the petitioner had presented. And this court has found in Mansour that it expects more than that, that a reviewing court must, at least in its decision, show that it has examined each of the pieces of evidence and not just merely restated the opposition party's brief.
So do you think it makes any difference in that SAR case that it arose from a motion to remand that was filed while the appeal to the board was pending and the removal order wasn't final? Do you think that makes any difference?
No, Your Honor. We don't believe that there's a distinction there that's worth...
Why not? Well, because the government argues that finality is what distinguishes this case.
Well, Your Honor, we still believe that the petitioner in this case was able to still show that it still wouldn't matter, because it would still collapse this distinction between the BIA and DHS if the DHS's opposition, no matter what stage of the proceeding we were in, they would still have complete, absolute veto power over the BIA, and that it just doesn't make sense, in the sense that if you think that the BIA and the Department of Homeland Security are somehow separate, then you can't say that DHS has this absolute veto, no matter what stage of the proceedings you're in. Thank you.
Mr. McLachlan.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Andrew McLachlan, and I represent the Respondent Attorney General of the United States in this case. The government's brief in this case is quite thorough and covers all of the arguments that the petitioner has covered in considerable detail. There's a couple of things that I want to draw the Court's attention to, though. First of all, as Judge Mannion noted earlier, marriages by people who are in removal proceedings are more than a little suspect. They are so suspect that Congress felt it obliged to pass a law that says we're going to presume that they're fraudulent, that they're shams, all of them, and therefore impose a requirement, an extraordinary burden on an alien seeking to adjust status based on that, that puts that alien under an extremely high burden. Put upon, on top of that, the disfavored motion to reopen heavy burden, and this Court's standard of review of that decision, and overturning that decision would be extraordinary. But just observe that to start out with. The second point I want to make is, let's pause for a moment on the issue of bona fide marriage. There's one error that was addressed here in argument, and that is the statement that there was no affidavit from Mr. Velarde in the Velarde case. There's a list of evidence that was included by the board in the Velarde case, but later on in the Velarde case, on page 256 of the Velarde case, the board specifically notes that Velarde submitted an affidavit attesting to his relationship with his wife, that he'd known her since 1995, that they had a child, that they wanted to get married to establish a home for their child and a family for the child. It was a very compelling affidavit from Mr. Velarde. If such an affidavit had existed in this case, there is no telling what the board would have done in this case. We can't say, but we can say it didn't exist in this case, and in this case, there was zero evidence, no evidence whatsoever, for the reason that these two people got married. The best evidence you have was the affidavit of the wife that says, my husband is a kind and respectful man, we live together, and we enjoy life together. We do. That's fine. But as the law says, the question is not what you're doing now. The question is, except to the extent that it refers back to whether or not your marriage was bona fide in the first place.
Do they have children?
They do. Well, at the time of this, of their application, no. And they haven't alleged since then that any children have been born since that time. In fact, if you look at the evidence,
that was August of 06.
They got married in August of 06. Their application for adjustment of status, the I-130 application was filed in December of 06. The board denied his appeal of his asylum application in April of 07, and the motion to reopen was filed in May of 07. And they didn't update any of the evidence in the that was contained in the I-130 application for the motion to reopen. So the motion to reopen was limited to evidence that had been generated within 4 months of the marriage. And that's all they had as a result of that. So that's one point. You're missing the entire scope, the entire concept of why did these two people get married. It just doesn't exist here, and therefore there's not a strong likelihood, there's not a clear and convincing evidence of a strong likelihood, and the board didn't abuse its discretion in denying it.
Can you speak to this Velarde factor where the government objects to the motion to reopen? I just want to find out sort of the extent or the scope of your position. And is that at any time the government objects to the motion to reopen, so long as it's not based on the Arthur case, the government's objection kills the motion to reopen or the what was carved out in Arthur?
Let me start out by saying this way. The government disagrees with the analysis in Saar and now in Melnitsenko in the Second Circuit that this has to be reviewed and can't be treated by the board as an isolated reason for denying a motion to reopen. The government disagrees with that because of Velarde itself. Velarde was an extraordinary exercise of discretion. Velarde took what everybody assumed was going to be an absolute rule. That is, if you don't have an approved I-130 application, you may not move to reopen. And said, we're going to create an exception to this out of our own unfettered ultimate discretion, but we're going to put some rules on it. Because we're doing such an extraordinary thing in creating this exception out of our unfettered discretion, we're going to put some rules on it. So to the extent that the board follows its own rules, it does not abuse its discretion, and it's essentially unreviewable in that respect. So to that extent, the government's telling you it's essentially unreviewable when the board follows that rule that it made in Velarde, because it was unreviewable in Velarde in the first place. Now, what doesn't happen is what what board member Pauly observed in his dissent in Velarde, that the DHS simply says we object and doesn't tell you why they're objecting and doesn't give the board reasons and doesn't give the board the chance to reject its reasons or not pay attention to its reasons. It doesn't do that, and this is a great case for this. The board the DHS objected for kind of two reasons. One is the clear and convincing evidence reason, which kind of flows into one of the existing Velarde factors. But the other was, there's something suspicious about this. Why give us a letter from the landlord when you could give us a lease? Why give us a letter from a banker when you could give us a bank statement? Maybe the bank statement shows that these two also have other accounts in which they don't commingle their funds, and therefore their bank account doesn't show. There's all kinds of things that DHS was trying to highlight in this that go beyond whether or not the evidence was bona fide marriage, and rather shows that the petitioner is trying to hide something, and therefore there's a likelihood or a possibility that the adjustment application will not be approved. So even if you follow Melnick-Sanku and Saar, all the board has to do is look at the reasons and determine whether or not they are in fact at all valid and reflect something beyond what they would otherwise be considering, and the board has done its job. And in this case, that's exactly what you see.
Well, one of these I-130 adjustment of status applications is filed. How long does it take before it's resolved?
It depends on the location, Your Honor. It also depends on the backlog that exists. In recent years, the backlog has grown dramatically.
We've seen a lot, long, long time passes before any adjudication comes up on it.
Honestly, if the application is prepared correctly and meets all of the checks all the blocks that DHS has said it wants to see, and it's very specific in its regulations of the kinds of things that it wants to see, if you check all those blocks and then you get the background check and so on that take place along with it accomplished, it does not take so long. If other things are going on, particularly in cases I perceive that there's a delay where cases are also involved in removal proceedings at the same time. For some reason, maybe the files are going back and forth or something like that. But whatever it is, those cases seem to take longer, or they get put on a lesser, low-speed docket. But also in cases where there's real questions. If you look at what's here, the immediate reaction is, where's the affidavit from the alien? I mean, how do we know why this guy got married? So what they're doing probably, if they haven't already done it, is assembling a list of additional documents that they would need to approve it. And they're either going to disapprove it because all these documents are not here, or they're going to say, in order to satisfy us, you have to produce the following additional stuff. That's the kind of, and that process of assembling that list takes a long time. The court has nothing further. Based on the government's brief, we think they should deny the petition for review.
Okay. Mr. Bergen, anything more?
May it please the court. Just to answer Judge Mannion's question, they do not have children. When they were married, the spouse was 42 years old, and actually she found that she was unable to bear children. So once again, that points out my point, which is to hold people to a certain standard of what exact documents you need. There's a plethora of documents that you could produce to go to the bona fide nature of your marriage. To cite what you did not produce is ludicrous, because whereas they don't, in the BIA's decision, they don't cite what we did produce. There's no discussion of what was produced. There's no proof that the BIA examined the evidence. They just say, this is what the DHS says is missing, and therefore there's no clear and convincing evidence, denied.
Well,
what's missing? A birth certificate of a child born of the marriage. Well, that looks bad, but when you actually look at the facts, they can't have children. There's no joint health insurance together. Well, these people are from economically disadvantaged community. They don't have jobs with health insurance. But what did they produce? Multiple affidavits from third parties. They produced state identification and a federal Social Security card that showed she changed her name to her married name. They produced her affidavit. They produced a letter from the bank. So all of these pieces of evidence at least deserve the consideration of the board, and their decision does not show that they properly addressed and analyzed these pieces of evidence before they rendered their decision.
Your time is up. Thank you, and the case is taken under advisement.